Hello, and welcome to Save Game Chronicles, a podcast where two friends of over 20 years play a retro video game for 2 weeks, and then we talk about all the good and the bad and the in-between of the game. I'm your host, John, and...
I'm Justin.
Justin, have you watched any TV shows or movies that were based on video games that were good, in your opinion?
I've seen plenty of them. Were they good? Not really. The Resident Evil movies are notoriously awful, but they're still fun to watch sometimes.
Which ones?
The Mia Jovovich ones.
Okay. I like those ones.
They're fun to watch, but they got nothing to do with the game at all. They'll have some of the same character names. The new Fallout series just came out. I haven't watched it yet, though. But that might be good.
Yeah, okay. So I watched maybe the first two episodes of Fallout. They actually stay pretty true to the game. I think why it's pretty good is because they don't try to imitate the game directly. It does kind of branch off and does its own thing. I think this one is Vault 33. Yeah, so they have Vault 33 is like the main character where she's from. And then just like in any Vault, like Fallout game, everything seems nice and fine. And then all of a sudden she ventures off and then circumstances has her go off into the wasteland and boom, now there's raiders and ghouls. And I don't know, I think it stays pretty faithful. You got to check it out.
I probably will. There was one that was pretty good on YouTube for a while called Nuka Break. That one was pretty good. Vic Mignogna was in it.
Was it? Oh, it was like, it was like a YouTube show or like it was its own?
Yeah, it was on YouTube. I forget the name of the group that did it, but I think it was like a small studio. And Vic Mignogna played a wandering trader. He got really into the role. It was pretty cool.
Man, getting someone who's actually decently famous.
Oh, he played the Mysterious Stranger too.
Mysterious Stranger.
It's the perk you can get the game where sometimes in vets, I think it's like a 15% chance the Mysterious Stranger
can
come out with a revolver and get you a critical hit.
That was only in New Vegas though, wasn't it?
No, it was in 3 and New Vegas.
Huh.
I think it might be in 4 too. I don't remember.
I don't remember it being in 4. But...
Speaking of Fallout, shout out to our new listener, Steve. Thank you for your request.
Oh yeah, Steve. Hey out there. All right, cool. Also, I want to say, have you watched the Sonic movies?
No, I haven't.
You haven't watched the Sonic?
No, I remember when the trailer for the first one came out before they redesigned Sonic, how it broke the internet.
Yeah.
People were creeped out by his eyes, me included.
Yeah, no, they redesigned it. The movies, that's pretty good. It's okay. I would say, I wouldn't say it's amazing, but I think it's pretty good.
That's the one with James Marsden and Jim Carrey, right?
Yep. Yeah, Jim Carrey, he's really good in there. Also, they have The Last of Us on Max.
I did watch that. I didn't finish it, but I've watched it.
That stays very true to the game, with the exception of like a few like character.
There's a few show exclusive things, but that's just normal.
Yeah, but that's pretty good. Oh, speaking of Sonic, we mentioned it already, but Jim Carrey, he's in there. And I love Jim Carrey. He's pretty good. Especially playing Dr. Robotnik. Felt like it pulled me right into the screen. And if I had a tail, I'd have to tail whip myself out of it. Matter of fact, we've been going on about TV for so long, I don't forgot what time it is. I think it's tail time. Kind of like the game of the episode, Gex.
We got to work on your segues, man.
Oh, that has to hurt.
Gex is the first video game of its trilogy and is a 2D side-scrolling platform adventure. Originally released in 1995 on the 3DO, Interactive Multiplayer Console, and later that year ported to the PlayStation and Sega Saturn in the US. It's developed by Crystal Dynamics, which is also the same company to develop the earlier Tomb Raider games and the Legacy of Kain series. This game marked the debut of the wisecracking Gecko protagonist and set the foundation for the series. Fun fact, due to the success of the game, Gex was also Crystal Dynamics' mascot until the year 2000.
Yeah, I never knew what the Geico Gecko did before his insurance career, but it's nice to play the games and get a little bit of backstory.
Yeah, that Gecko, he seems to be more businesslike.
He mellowed with age.
I don't know. I think maybe this is his failed little brother.
So I had never played this game. You have growing up, right?
Yeah.
Tell me why you chose this game for us to play for this episode.
It was a childhood favorite of mine. Like a lot of my earlier games, I liked the way the design of the case looked. The character looked cool. The 90s color scheme was pretty fun for me as a 7-year-old. So one day I was out at the game store, Funko Land. It's not done around anymore, but yeah, my dad took me out there and I saw this game and I wanted it. He got it for me. When I took it home, I just loved the design of the levels. I remember thinking Gex was just a fun and funny character to play. The game was a little bit too hard for me as a 7-year-old, but it was still, I don't know, I still enjoyed it. This game had inspired me to do 2 kid projects. One was the shoebox that I had made into a board game, and it's actually designed after the first level with the tombstones and skeletons and things like that. The rules of that board game were pretty bare bones.
I think I remember you showing me that. Yeah, but it was like the beginning of our show says 20 years ago.
Yeah, it was like a shoebox, and I had got the dice from the Monopoly game, and you just rolled the dice and moved your piece, so it was pretty.
I remember you did show it to me.
Yeah.
We were probably like 13, 14 years old.
Wow.
So yeah, it was a long time ago. I remember we were trying to play it, but you couldn't remember what the rules were you wrote for it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah, and then my other project I did was this like wisecracking vampire called Vamp, the Vampire. It was just a design that I drew up, wanted to maybe put in like a comic book or something like that. I don't know, maybe one of these days I'll go back and revive these projects. By the way, Justin and listeners, trademark, so you can't steal my ideas.
So. Already signed with Hasbro, people.
So you mentioned that you don't have any exposure or experience with this game. You never played it or anything?
The only thing I knew about Gex before playing it for the episode were the things that you've told me about it. Because before we even had the idea for this podcast, over the years, you've told me about the game and tried to get me to play it. So no, I had no prior knowledge, really.
Yeah. Have you played any of the Crystal Dynamics games or?
No, I don't think. I never played Legacy of Kain. Never played any of the early Tomb Raiders. I've only ever played one Tomb Raider, and it was the newer reboot one.
Oh, so you probably never even seen the mascot then?
I guess not.
All right. Now you've played it.
There you go. But do we save it? And then you put in the sound filler.
Gameplay. In Gex, players control the titular Gecko as he navigates through a series of television-inspired levels, each filled with obstacles, enemies, and hidden secrets. There are 5 hub worlds, and technically there's a hub of a hub world, I guess you could call it, that houses the other worlds. There's also a secret world that's unlocked after you meet the right requirements. Within each of these worlds are television sets that need to be powered on with remotes that are found in the levels, and that's pretty much how you progress through the game. The game is a side-scrolling platforming adventure with pretty basic controls. We both played the game on PlayStation 1 over these past 2 weeks. The controls are pretty simple. Just look up and down. Pushing the arrow down allows you to duck. There's a run button that when you hold it down while moving left or right, allows Gex to run or make longer jumps. Other buttons include the jump, lick, and tail whip.
Yeah, I will say something that hindered me right at the start due to my own stupidity was I didn't think, oh, he's a gecko. He can cling to walls and ceilings. There's a part in like the very first level where there's a very small gap and I'm thinking, oh, I got to duck under that. When you duck, you can't move. I was already like, oh, great. I already don't know what to do in this game. And you got to jump on the wall and climb into the gap, like hanging from the ceiling. And when that clicked, I was like, oh man, I should have taken my ADD medication this morning.
Or if you would have tail whipped the question marks, it would have told you.
I tail whipped all of them and didn't say nothing.
Really? Granted, I mean.
It probably did, but again, didn't take the ADD meds.
You probably couldn't read it anyway. The font is pretty small.
You can tell it was a 3DO game. But that's not a bad thing. You said the game came out in 95?
Yeah.
Much older than I thought this game was. I didn't look up anything about it. I would have guessed like 99, 98. So yeah, for the time, it's fine. Looks great.
Yeah. You mentioned the ability of climbing on walls and sticking to walls. That's a major feature in this game. And not only do you stick to the walls that are like left and right to you, but you can also stick to the walls that, I don't know how to explain it. It's like where they're behind, like it's where you have to push up and jump. And it sticks to like the background. I felt like that's pretty unique for not only for its time, but just unique in general for these type of 2D platformers to be able to climb on walls that are in the background.
For the time, yeah.
Yeah.
Because this is before the whole 2.5D craze. So it might have been one of the first games to do it, as far as we know.
Yeah, because there's a section in, I forgot which world it, or which level it is, but it's in the first world, the like with the graveyards, and you have to jump across this water. As a kid, I got stuck at this part because I was like, I can't jump over this water, not knowing that I could actually just cling to the background and climb around it. I don't know if you remember, if you know the part I'm talking about.
You know, I'm starting to get a little angry just because as many times as I died to the water and I never found that out. We can continue.
Speaking of dying, you do have three hand stones or handprint hand stones. I don't remember what, I think they're called hand stones, but they're in the shape of handprints. You start each level with those three. As you progress through the level, you can get more handprints by getting these little circle, these like little
power-ups.
So you get these power-ups and that'll allow you to get a little bit more health. When the enemies hit you, you just lose a handprint. When you lose all your handprints, start the level over. Or if you've tail whipped the Polaroid cameras, then that acts as a checkpoint. You'll come right back to that checkpoint. But as you mentioned, the water that's in there, yeah, if you fall into the water, you just die and it's game over. It doesn't matter how many handprints you have.
Just like geckos in real life, the amphibious reptile that can't touch water or they melt away to nothing.
And what's even more silly is there are levels where you actually are in the water. So like you don't die in that water. It's just you die in very specific water.
Notice that little inconsistency, did you?
Yeah, I don't think there is like a breath meter either. So you could just, you stay underwater forever if you want to.
I will say, and this isn't a fault of the game. It's of its time. It was a limitation of games of the era. Something that annoyed me was sometimes in side-scroller games, you know how moving doesn't necessarily move your character so much as it moves the level.
Yeah.
There were so many times where I would be hit by an enemy just off screen because the screen hadn't caught up to where I was yet. And that was so irritating. But all games in this style were like this by then. So that's not anything against the game itself. Just something I wanted to vent and that I could save from telling my therapist next time I see him.
How do you feel about the level that actually moves with you? It's in like the jungle, like the action part of the game. As you're moving forward, the game's forcing you to move forward.
When I got there and noticed it, I was immediately irritated. I was like, oh, this is not going to be fun. But I didn't end up having that much trouble with it. Those levels in general can be frustrating, but it's fine. It's there.
Yeah. As I mentioned before, the ultimate objective is to collect the remotes that let you then continue moving throughout the different hub worlds, ultimately getting to final boss, which is Rez, who has trapped you in the media dimension, but we'll get to that with story later. So these level designs, they're inspired by various like television and movie genres. They include horror movies for the first world, cartoons for the second world, action movies for the third, like action jungle type Indiana Jones movies, kung fu movies for the fourth world, and then there's like a sci-fi, I don't know if you would call it Rez's world sci-fi.
It's like futuristic sci-fi.
Okay.
If you've ever played Crash Bandicoot 3, like the ending levels in that game.
Yeah, and then each level features unique enemies and obstacles that match that world. For example, in the horror movie world, there are Frankenstein geckos, killers in masks with a chainsaw for an arm. Or in the cartoon world, there might be random falling anvils, similar to how it is in like an actual cartoon. How many times had you died throughout this game?
A lot. More so at the beginning. Because I'd never played the game before, so I had no muscle memory or prior knowledge or anything like that. I replayed the first two levels so many times. I don't remember many levels in the game, their name, but I remember Frankendeli, I think was one name. Frankenheli.
Frankenweenie? Or no, maybe.
I don't know. I guess I don't remember. But those first two levels, I kept getting hit by the Frankenstein enemies. I kept falling in the water. So I died a lot there. Later in the game, I died a lot to the final boss. I'd say probably over the course of my full playthrough, I died maybe at least 30 times.
So the reason why I mentioned that is I assume you've gotten game over before.
Yeah.
With that, there's no save points in this game.
No, there are not.
It is a password-based progression, or I guess password-based save function, which before I go further into that, fun fact, I didn't know this until doing a little bit of research, but in the PlayStation 1 and the Sega Saturn versions of this game, it uses those password features. But in the 3DO version, it actually has a save feature.
Oh, then I'm about to rip this one a new one. Because I assume that was a limitation carried over from the 3DO version.
No.
I was like, why would you port a game to a console with memory cards and not put in a save feature? And I was like, oh, okay, I can't get too hard on it because that was a limitation carried over. So hearing that, I'm going to be writing a letter to whoever made this game with excessive punctuation and exclamation points.
The original PlayStation came out in September of 95. This game came out shortly after that. So the developers, when they created it, probably didn't know how to incorporate memory cards with a new system. So I guess you can give them a little bit of a pass. Sega Saturn? I don't know. I never had a Sega Saturn.
I haven't decided yet.
But anyway, on the PS1 version, it uses the password, like these passwords that you collect throughout the levels.
Basically, if you find a password VHS, and then you enter that password from the main menu of the game, you start the game from the point that the level you found the tape in is unlocked.
Yep. Okay. But with that being said, I did mention about there being a secret world. There are also secret pieces to the secret remote. When you use these passwords, they don't save those pieces. So then if you do end up dying or getting game over, you will lose all of your secret stuff that you've collected up to that point. Especially if you're trying to 100% the game and complete the secret levels, you have to do that all in one sitting. You wouldn't be able to put down the game, save it, and start over. No, as soon as you turn off the game, you lose your progress in that up to those secret levels. To that point, you also have to finish all the secret levels without getting game over as well, which means, it takes a lot of patience.
Yes, it does. So, and even in a single sitting, you can beat this game 100% it in 2 or 3 hours. But man, it is a lot of tail time to be going through in 2 or 3 hours.
Bringing it back to the different abilities that you can get in this game, there are these power-ups. Gex can lick these power-ups with his...
He can eat them.
Yeah, so he eats the power-ups, and that will give him things like super speed, fireballs, the ability to freeze enemies.
Or if you tail whip them, you get a health point back, a handprint.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I accidentally hit the wrong button, and I might have full health, and then I didn't realize that.
Yeah, I was the opposite. I tail whipped all of them because I was always low on health.
Oh, wow.
And for the longest time, I'd eat them and didn't notice whatever power up they gave me. So there's a jumping attack in the game where you can jump, press the down button and the tail whip button, and Gex will turn his tail into a coil, and it's how you destroy like obstacles below you. But the game says if you press up in the jump button immediately after doing that attack, you can do like a super jump.
I didn't know that either.
With his tail as like a spring, but I swear I could never get that move to work. I could never get any lift off after it.
All these years, I've never known that. I would use a tail spring to jump off of enemies, so you can bounce off the top of the enemies. It'll kill them, and then it'll give you that little bit of airtime to let you move forward.
But and maybe that's what it was. Maybe I was just assuming, oh, it's like a moon jump. Like, I'm going to spring high up into the air, but really it's just a little bit of extra lift off. So maybe I was activating it to realize it. Oh, and that reminds me, did you watch a lot of TV growing up?
Probably not as much as Gex, but yes.
I was going to say, because this game feels like it was made by somebody. If you've ever seen The Cable Guy,
yeah.
You mentioned you like Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
And how he was obsessed with TV and knew all these references and quotes. That's what this game is. You get sucked into a TV, each level being a different genre. And Gex constantly throughout the game just peppers one-liners and quotes from movies or pop culture references that blew right over our head for the most part. It's just, I'm not sure what some of the references meant, but they were still funny. I will say whoever voiced Gex, his line delivery is spot on.
Yeah, that was Dana Gould. He's a comedian, well known for his stand-up in the 90s. I don't know who he is. I'm not sure. Have you ever heard of him?
I've heard the name, but I don't think I've ever seen his stand-up. I'm pretty sure I've seen his name in The Simpsons.
Yeah, when I was looking this up, yeah, he is in The Simpsons. He did a couple episodes. I don't think he did a lot of episodes in The Simpsons, but yeah, he is credited for doing a decent amount of episodes in The Simpsons.
And it makes sense because a lot of Getz's line deliveries sound like a stand-up comedian, like doing impersonations.
Yeah, actually, a lot of them were impersonations. There's the one, and you probably got tired of hearing it.
Oh, yeah. It's like Scoob.
geez, Scoob, let's get back to the mystery van. Yeah, as obnoxious as a lot of these jokes are, they never got old for me. I don't know about for you.
Only the Scooby-Doo ones got grating after a while, but that's just because I replayed the first couple levels so many times, and that's when those ones trigger.
Yeah, they're never overdone. I don't know how many lines are in this game, but there's a decent amount.
There's got to be at least like five.
Yeah, and five. No, there's a decent amount. Maybe in the hub worlds, he replays a lot of those ones. He never really said the same things more than a couple times throughout the level. Maybe I might hear that same repeated joke or one-liner on a different level, but never in the same level have I heard multiple times.
I did a few. Your segue into the episode was one of them, Tail Time. Oh, yeah.
It's Tail Time.
Oh, yeah. It's Tail Time.
Since we were already talking about characters, I want to talk about the story and the characters. We can start with the characters, and there's only two.
Yeah.
It's just Gex and Rez.
And aside from Gex being a new Jazzercise, Barca lounging TV watcher, we don't really know much about him.
Yeah.
And we know even less about Rez.
Yeah. I, as a kid, even now replaying this game, I'm not sure if Rez is a mechanical fly. I don't really know what.
And when you fight him, it's almost like he's a wizard or something. It's weird.
Yeah, like Rez, he doesn't really have a personality. He is menacing. I will give him that. The fact that there's only two characters who are voiced in this game, I'm actually scared of him. Like when his first lines in the game is, "You are mine." And the way he says that sounds like Darth Vader. A little bit scary. But other than that, I don't think he has a real motive. Why did he capture Gex? Well, I don't think they go into detail.
Maybe it's got something to do back in the 90s. People used to do all the time is maybe he was running a cable and leeching his neighbor's cable service. And Rez had a bone to pick with that.
And then the entire game is spent with different enemies. They're just trying to kill you, which I guess it's a video game and that's supposed to be the case. But I would appreciate it more if I knew why the enemies are coming after me rather than just trying to stop me from reaching my goal, which is to escape. But then again, the whole point is if I don't escape, then Gex dies. And why don't you just kill him to begin with?
I don't think it's necessarily that they're specifically after Gex, the enemies. I think it's that Gex is thrown into the world of these movies. They're the monsters that are killing everything. And he just happens to be another everything now.
Okay. Okay. That brings a little bit more light to that. Because that was one of my biggest complaints about this game was like, I didn't understand why things were happening the way they were, but that actually makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, as far as I took it, it's just he's bouncing through these movie worlds, trying to find his way to whatever dimension or world that Rez is in to beat him to be able to come back to his world.
So on to the NPCs, since they are other characters. I guess there's more than just the two that I mentioned, but with those NPCs, how did you feel about them? Did you like their designs? Was there anything about them that you appreciated, or were they just... Yeah.
Being honest, nothing jumps out at me.
Yeah.
Being really honest, I don't even remember any other NPCs. Like, I played the Gecko. I'm going after the weird wizard fly thing.
Okay, so tell me you have an opinion on the bosses then. Because I think that those... And so, like, I'll tell you my opinion real quick. So the very first boss is that girl. The level starts off, she's like this... She's a pretty girl summoning these skulls and trying to kill you with the skulls. All right. I don't know why she's doing it, but as you said, Maybe she's just in her own horror movie and that's what she's doing.
Yeah.
But then you hit her enough times and now she turns into this evil witch and who's spitting acid at you. I thought that was unique in the approach. Same thing in level two. You have the superhero who, it's, again, it's a cartoon. It's supposed to be funny. You have the superhero who he's drinking this unknown liquid who gives him superpowers. And when he drinks it, he gets the bubble guts. And so he spends the entire time farting.
God, and I remember that guy. That was weird.
So he farts and it propels him in your direction. And you essentially just got to jump over him enough times where he just starts flying off and you got to hit him with these anvils.
Yeah, that one reminded me, if you ever, growing up, read the Captain Underpants books, it was like the same kind of humor. So it was a little nostalgic for me there. I was like, wow, this game is really just pulling everything out.
Yeah, I like that boss, but there was one boss that I didn't like too much, and it was a turtle. It was like a mechanical turtle who flies. It didn't really quite fit in with the level itself, which it's the boss of the Kung Fu like TV like area.
I thought it fit in fine.
Yeah.
It was a little weird, but you have to be if you want people to remember it. I was just thinking Kung Fu Panda is a thing, so this is fine.
I looked at it as maybe this is supposed to be like a Ninja Turtle. You're in this Kung Fu land, and maybe this is like a robotic Ninja Turtle. That was the one boss I didn't like. I got it. Like all the other ones, I appreciated. There's the one where like the action movie jungle one where there's this snake dragon thing that's just jumping through these holes and you have to like, keep climbing to the top to get the remote at the very top.
I feel like some of them too might have been references that just went over our head.
That could be it.
Because I swear that the snake thing reminded me of something. I just couldn't think of it. It could have just been that I was thinking of like a Chinese dragon.
Yeah. But okay. No, cause yeah, this was in the jungle though.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, you know, serpentine dragon, like in Chinese places and stuff. If it came out in 95, I might not have even been able to pronounce the name of the game yet.
Yeah. In 95, I would have probably been watching Barney and Sesame Street. And
me too. The episode where Big Bird did crack.
I don't know what show you're watching.
You can cut
that. I might just leave that in. But yeah.
That was an SNL skit.
SNL. That's a good point. He references SNL a lot too.
Oh yeah.
Hey, SNL.
Kill your TV, man.
His one-liners, they're like hands down probably one of my favorite things in this game.
They are weirder than 4th of July at Rick James' place.
This place is weirder than 4th of July at Rick James' place.
Moving on to graphics and sound here. Obviously, this game is visually it's outdated. It only has, I think, what, two or maybe three cutscenes in this game. Those cutscenes themselves are pretty, they're pretty smooth. I think they're well drawn. I think they look great. But the entire game itself, it's dated. The power-ups that I mentioned earlier, if you didn't realize this, they're not just circles with these little emblems inside of them. They're actually bugs inside. There's like a centipede one. There's like a grasshopper one.
Yeah, I couldn't tell what they were.
Yeah, it was because
it's like eat the pretty marble.
Yeah. The only one I could make out was probably the pink one that has like a yellow butterfly in the middle, which gives you an extra life.
Mm.
But yeah, like I only reason I know that they're bugs is because I looked up some of this stuff for this episode.
Gex's sprite was pretty well done, which is where the focus should be on the side scroller is the character you're playing. His animations were pretty fluid. It didn't look too, what's the word I'm looking for?
Choppy.
Choppy. Yeah. I was going to say janky, but.
That's a good point. The animations, like the character animations are great. It's not just Gex. I think the enemies have pretty solid animation as well. I don't know how you feel about that because I know you said that you didn't pay a lot of attention to the enemies, but like there's the guy with the chainsaw for a hand.
Who can die in one tail whip, and I don't understand.
It makes it easy for me. But he swings his arm around with the chainsaw, and then it looks fluid. Like I mentioned, the farting superhero.
Gastro man.
The animation here is well done. Taking it back to that boss, the robotic turtle I told you about a little bit ago, that animation was probably the only bad animation I have to say about this game. There's a point where he's trying to get closer or get far away based in this two-dimensional world. So it ends up just looking like he's just a shrinking turtle who's getting really big.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's just him trying to like go far away or come really close. And the
maybe it did look a little awkward.
Yeah. And but again, that's not the majority of this game. Most of the animations are just they're great. Oh, and the enemy death animations are just unique in their own way as well. Let's say, for instance, you just tail whip an enemy, they'll have this like static silhouette as they fade away. Mm. I thought that was unique in its approach to keep you immersed in the game, but I don't know. I thought it was nice. Oh, and then I also want to talk about the game's backgrounds. Level designs were amazing. For example, level designs were great, and it's not just my opinion, it's Gex's opinion too. One of his number one quotes that stand out to me is his reference of the first hub world where he says, "I like the slime boys. Nice touch." He's referencing the slime that's oozing out of the skull's mouths. Even in the cartoon world, there's like the rocket that's taking off. There's these little character storm presents and it's just going pop, like with the little comic, whatever you want to call it. I don't know. Yeah, I really like the design of the worlds. The levels themselves are well done. It's not your background is not just a static background. There are actually stuff going on in the back. Taking it back to the graveyard levels, for example. If you notice in the background, there's a moon, and occasionally you'll see the clouds moving over the moon. You'll see a witch flying across the moon. Same thing in the cartoon worlds when you're climbing up to space. In one of the levels, you're climbing up to space. You'll see clouds moving in the distance. You'll see that when you get to space, you'll see the stars twinkling in the background. So the background, there's stuff going on there. The level design is just well put together. I don't know. It looked great.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add to it, but I'll say I agree.
Yeah. Musically, my opinion on that, again, this game definitely shows its age. A lot of the music, it has that like 90s, early 90s, late 80s guitar, like electric guitar to it.
Yeah. Especially the start screen.
Yeah. Like a lot of that reminded me of the electric guitar from Michael Jackson's Thriller or Bad. That's what, like, whenever I hear the music, that's what my brain goes to is like those older Michael Jackson songs. Music still is great.
Now that you mentioned, I'm surprised there were no Michael Jackson references in the game that I can remember, at least.
Yeah, you're a good point. But yeah, the music just sounds great in my opinion. Even though it is dated, if you were to watch like an older show, maybe like the Flintstones or something like that, it's clearly dated, but you still appreciate the charm about it.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about the music?
I pretty much just thought it was there.
Yeah, nothing really.
The start screen music stands out because of the guitar. The rest of it is just synth beats or something.
I do feel that way about the later levels. As a kid, my skills weren't that good in this game. I only made it to maybe the cartoon world and occasionally the jungle world, which is the third world. So a lot of that music stands out to me.
Mm-hmm. A lot of the music from the first two levels stands out to me.
And that's where I was going with that is like, maybe you're right. Maybe the only reason why I like the music is because I've heard it a lot of times. Going back to this, I cannot think in my head what the last two worlds sound like.
I can understand it. It's hard to tell when you're coming from a position of having played it before. Because if you were to ask me right now what PlayStation 1 game has the best soundtrack, immediately what pops in my head is Ape Escape. And we've both played that game so much growing up. Is it because it's nostalgic or is it actually good? The answer is it is actually really good. But anyone else, they haven't played the game or somebody who's played the game for the first time, they're not paying attention to the music so much as they're just trying to get through it to see what they think is all the game has to offer. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, no, it does. Being able to having that nostalgia effect. So I guess, yeah, if I take off my nostalgia headphones, then I'm a little bit torn because, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how to feel about it because, yeah, I do really enjoy it's still in my head is the cartoon world. But yeah, the rest of the game past the cartoon world just kind of does just blur together. I don't necessarily want to say it's a bad thing, but Yeah, it's not, it's just there. Mm-hmm. Now I'm thinking about it with sound effects. They're also kind of just there. Like they only the fly coins, which are, I guess we didn't even really go into that. And
it's basically just the standard, this game's version of whatever collectible platformer has. You get 100 of them and you get an extra life. Mario has coins, Jack and Daxter had orbs.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, his tail bouncing is there, the tail whipping is there, the licking is there, but all the other sound effects, they just do blend in. So I guess they're not really much to really get hyped over. All right. I guess that brings us to the end of the episode where we have to decide if this game is worth saving or shelving. Now that we both know that this game actually can be saved on the 3DO, before you give us your opinion, I want you to name off some pros and cons and let us know if you're going to save it or if you're going to shelf it.
Pros are definitely the pop culture references, because even if you haven't played the game before, it's already at least at some point going to feel nostalgic for you, which I think is a huge benefit to this game. Cons, like we were talking about with the soundtrack. If you haven't grown up playing the game or you haven't played it before, it's probably not going to be memorable for you at all, if you even notice it. The graphics are pretty dated, but the game is, what, 30 years old?
Roughly. A little under.
The biggest con is not being able to save your progress. That's almost a deal breaker for a lot of people, me included. Yeah, I'm just going to jump into it and say, despite everything I just said, that the game's a save for me. Just because what I said about the pop culture references, even if you've never played it before, I'm not going to say timeless, but it gives the game that kind of, it'll be relevant for a long time feel.
Hmm.
Some of it hasn't aged very well. There's a level in the game called the Twin Towers.
No, yeah.
But yeah, even if I wasn't the biggest fan of the game, but I definitely understand why it has them. So yeah, for me, it's a save.
Okay. I'm not going to lie. I thought you were going to shelf it. Not going to lie.
I have some culture.
Before I give my thoughts on it, I do want to say that going back to this game, making sure that, because it's been years before since I've last sat down and really played this game, and doing it these past 2 weeks, I can say that it's the choice that I'm going to make. It comes with a barely, and what I mean by that is it's close either way. So I guess I'll start with my pros here. Gex overall is just fun. He's funny. He's a great main character. Music, like I mentioned earlier. I don't know if it's just the nostalgia. I'm trying to take it off and I still can't decide if it's great music or just there, but I'm going to say it's great. I'm going to say it's great music. I think the levels and the designs are just beautifully done. A lot of work had been put in. The artist, amazing job. If you guys ever listen to this, just want to let you know, I really appreciate your art. Great characters, like their models, their animations, they're great. But then that brings me to my cons. Like, yeah, as you mentioned, yeah, not having a save feature, that's a big deal. Again, you have the save feature on the 3DO, but if you're playing this on PS1, which is the most easiest to obtain out of the three systems that it was on, you're not going to have a save feature, and that's a big deal. The story, there hardly is any story. The antagonist, though he looks cool in a way, he's still just boring. The levels, they can be a little bit challenging as you get towards the end of the game, but I won't let that be too much of a con. But overall, just like I said, I can go either way and I'm going to save it. But I'm going to save it just barely. I do think there's a few things that really do deter me from like fully loving this game as I did as a kid. But overall, it is still fun. It's a good game. And I think that a lot of people, if you guys get a chance, just check it out. It's fun to play. It's not that long of a game, and it's a good time overall.
And it's fine. If you remember on our Mega Man Legends episode, that's what I did when it came time to rate it. Said definite save without question. And then I said, but if I'm taking the nostalgia glasses off, it's barely a save.
It was pretty interesting going back and playing a game that I loved as a kid and then barely liking it. It's just right enough to say I like it, but not loving it.
Yeah.
But yeah, again, that takes us to the overall grade here. And you saved it, I saved it. And yeah, it's going into the memory card as long as you're saving it on the 3DO.
For real. You don't include a save feature in a PS1, but you do on the 3DO. You can GTFO.
All right. But this episode being the save, we are going to be putting Gex aside and selecting a game to play for our next episode. We're going to be doing things a little bit different this time. We would typically be taking turns, and this time it would be your turn, Justin. However, we actually have some listeners' requests. Three of them, to be exact. We're going to be playing your guys' games in order of who wrote in first. And with that, I want to give a shout out to our first write-in. I'm probably going to butcher your name, but Sari, not sure. I apologize if I did butcher your name there. But I just want to say how awesome that is and how it's greatly appreciated. So thank you. They wrote, "I think you guys should try the X games in the Mega Man series since you guys played Legends." They did not exactly specify which of the Mega Man X games we should play. So we'll leave it up to you, Justin. Which one of the Mega Man X games should we play?
Oh, geez, that's me. I was bouncing back and forth between a few different X games for this one. To be honest, I'm still bouncing between two of them in my head right now, so I'm just going to pick one. Mega Man X6.
Yeah.
And I want you to do X6 specifically because I want you to get into the series. And X6 is notoriously the most hated one. I want you to see that it's still a good game. It's just hated because of how it was developed. And at points, it is unfairly difficult. Yeah, that was the most hated one, and I got to see what the other ones are like.
Okay.
And I will say, Keiji Inafune made the Mega Man games. People know him now for making the Dead Rising series. He had nothing to do with X6. He intended for X5 to be the final in the X series. X6 was rushed. It was released 6 months after 5. Takes place 3 weeks after in the story. It's the only one with voice acting in the series that was never dubbed outside of Japan, so it's in Japanese with very poorly translated subtitles. But the gameplay is great. The soundtrack is some of the best in gaming. I'm just going to tell you right now. I think you're going to like it. We'll see. If you do shelf it, the 20-year friendship may be over.
Justin, on that note, where can our listeners contact us at?
You can reach us directly at contact@savegamechronicles.com. We also have a Facebook page and Twitter. We're always looking for recommendations, feedback. If there's a game you would like to request an episode on, we just ask that the game is at least 15 years old. That's the main focus of the podcast. But if you recommend a newer game and there's an older one in that game series, we could consider that too.
Yeah. And I do want to give another special shout out to Sari, as well as Steve and Chris, who have written in and given your guys' requests. As mentioned, Sari, we will be playing Mega Man X6 per your request. Steve and Chris, be on the lookout in the coming episodes for your guys' request. We really appreciate you guys writing in.
Thanks, guys.
Go ahead and get yourselves a copy of Mega Man X6 to play along with us.
If you're wanting an original PlayStation 1 copy, it's going to be pretty hard to find, but the game is available on the Mega Man X Collection on PS4, Xbox One. Pretty sure it's on Switch, too. The only problem, I wouldn't recommend that one, is there were a lot of changes in the games when switching over to the Legacy Collection. Some references were, they got rid of them. So enemies have different names. Some of the soundtracks are different because they lost rights to the songs. I would recommend, if you can, play the original PS1 version, but it is available on modern consoles.
All right. So with that, join us again next time as we play Mega Man X6 in about 2 weeks. And I'm your host, Where's Johnny? And
I'm just Justin.
And this has been Save Game Chronicles. Cue the outro. Dana something. Dana Good?
Oh, Dana Good.
Dana Good?
I think so.
Yeah, it was Dana. Dana Good?
Hold on.
Dana Gold.
Dana Gold.
Gold.